the tune's called Wiper on the Hob. And I think I heard Paddy Keenan play it. Great job, you know. He's a guy who played with the Body Band.
Well, maybe you could, is like I say, the maybe some technical stuff about the instrument in terms of your technique and just the way the instrument works.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Now, the chanter itself has two octaves on it, which is peculiar to the Illyn pipes. The Highland bagpipes only has one octave. And the Illyn pipe chanter is held on down on the leg. And I have a piece of leather called a popping strap under the chanter so I can pinch the bag. Now, what I mean by pinch the bag is I have the bellows under my right arm and the bag under my left, and I pump the air into this reservoir bag under my left arm. When I have that bag fairly well filled up, I can then go up the first octave. And if I press a little hard, then the reed in the chanter will kind of pinch together and give me a second octave. Now,
so that's controlled from with the combination of
with the combination of the bellows, with the combination of my right, there's a peculiar situation about this. You have to learn to play the bag and the bellows, because if you are pump up the bag and you keep pumping it up and over pump up the bag, your drones will fluctuate up and down. It's something that you have to be careful with. You have to learn to play the bellows and bag in order to not to get, you know, too much wobbling up and down on your drones. In other words, you have to have a nice balanced feel with the regulators or with the bag and bellows. Now that will give you, like I say, the second octave. Yes, and I don't have an F key on this. I do have a C key here on the back of my chanter, but there are four, five, six keys can be added to to the chanter, which gives you extra notes like half notes and stuff like that.
Really?
And they also, of course, pardon?
This one is just straight.
Yes, right here. Scale of the chanter, showing you that I can get the two octaves. And then there are the three drones. The large one down here is the bass drone, and then there's the baritone drone, the middle drone, and then the small tenor drone. Now they have quills in them, what we call quills, like, you know, they're like little tubes of cane, and they're slotted, and those are the drones. The regulators have double reeds, like oboe reeds, comparable to oboe reeds. And of course, they're very susceptible to damage. You have to be very careful in putting them in and out in your instrument, or you'll break them, and then you're in trouble. Of course, the Illyn pipes are very susceptible to the weather, particularly in the United States, in the hotter climates.
Right.
Like it gets very hot, and it gets hot here in St. Louis, and it gets very hot. And I played them out in Phoenix, Arizona, here last year, and they closed up on me. So you're always playing the Illyn pipes is a very humiliating experience, a very humbling experience, because sometimes you're out really want to do a great job of them, and you find that your reeds are closed, and they won't work, and this can lead to a lot of frustration.
I guess so. Are those drones tunable then?
Oh yes, I can adjust them up and down to the chanter, but like I say, you know, with the heat and the humidity and that, it's very hard to keep them. You have to adjust them constantly, like, you know, and it makes them very difficult.
They adjust by sliding in and out? Or?
Yes, I slide them up and down. The drone fits over another small cylinder. Chantering. It's almost like a trombone. You know how a trombone slides up and down, and you get the notes.
Like that,
well, it's like a trombone effect on the drones. They slide backwards and forwards. And to sharpen, of course, the drones, you bring them closer up.
Right.
And in order to flatten them, you lengthen them out again.
Right.
Now the regulators are sharpened, or flattened and sharpened, by inserting a rush. They use a rush in Ireland. That goes alongside the river, and you attach the rush to a small piece of metal which is inside the regulator, and then you can push it up and down by adjusting these little ends here. You see these little bulbs on the end, and you can push them up and down, and that's how that's done. Now, the main idea is to get a good chanter read. A good chanter read is the key to the whole thing. If you don't have a good chanter read, then it's ridiculous to tune your pipes at all. So you must get a good chanter read which has a good sounding bottom D. And a nice and a top D that doesn't break on it, which is nice and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to keep that. Now, in this chanter here, by the way, this happens to be a Ginsberg chanter, and it was made in London by a man.
I see the chanter is.
Yeah, right, right, right.
I was noticing that.
Right, so, you know, so it's a Blackwood chanter, and it's got a good tone to it. It's got a nice
sound.
No, it's not an old. I just got it over there. 19, a young man picked it up for me, mm-hmm. from Mr. Ginsberg, in 1977. Brought it back to me, and I just happened to have it here because the other chant that I had didn't hold up in the heat here, and I had to have a spare chant. That's why I'm using this. That's part of the situation. And the rest of the pipes, the stock is made out of maple, and then this is in the South American Brazilian wood. For the regulators and the drones that I'm using, and of course these are all brass. It's all brass fittings, mm-hmm. with good springs on them underneath to push the regulators back up again. So it's a very well made set of pipes, and Dave Quinton did an excellent job on putting them together. So, but that's part of the like I say, the big problem with the Elan pipes is keeping the reeds and trying to keep reeds in them, mm-hmm. and working on them. And of course, if it wasn't for some of the people back in Ireland who give us a hand getting reeds and stuff like that, we just would be out of business, because there aren't enough people here in the States, and usually in the States the distance is so great to travel to meet somebody that can do some work on them or something, it's almost impossible to keep your pipes up, you know. Mm-hmm. So when we meet, we're always delighted to meet a fiddle player, even I'm, you know, or somebody else, you know, who wants to play with you, like Johnny McGreevy, who's here at the mm-hmm. festival with me, and Mike Rafferty. They're both two great. Rafferty plays the flute, and Johnny McGreevy plays the fiddle, and he's a great old fiddle player. He's been he's been responsible for starting many people in Chicago on the fiddle, and I believe it was his name, Miles Krasner, and a whole bunch of these people who play fiddle have gone and seen this man, you know. But Johnny is a great guy on the fiddle, and like I say, it's a pleasure to play with him here in St. Louis. Yeah. And like I say, it's not that often that you do come across a fiddle player who plays traditional Irish music. And for us both to get together, it's just great. Yeah. Now, there are many, many American fiddle players. There's lots of American fiddle players here. But their music, although it has some similarities between our music, like the Irish tradition music, it has, and I'm sure that was the basis for all of the American music.
Yeah. Gotcha,
it's always great to meet a man who specializes in, you know, like one Frenchman over here in Montreal, Jean Carignan, is an excellent fiddle player. I played with him up in Mariposa one time, and he's a great man, and great, and a lovely fiddle player, just great. Yeah, there was a whole crowd of the fiddle players up there, so we didn't get much chance to, you know, and I was just one of the crowd of people hanging around. Mm-hmm. But he's a great man and a great fiddle player, and did a great job.
And the music you're playing with him was?
Was Irish style, oh yeah, he plays Irish style, yeah. So I've seen Ollie Bain of the Boys of Lock is another great fiddle player, mm-hmm. and he can play with the pipers, and I'm sure he has. He understands traditional Irish music very well. Of course, he's from the Orkney Islands, and he should. And he's a great fiddle player. So it's great to meet these kind of people. You know. Thank you. those are two hornpipes. One was called a fairy hornpipe, as in Irish fairies, you know, and the other was, I can't remember what the other one was. That is from, I think I heard some piper play it in Waterford, I'm not sure. Ryan Moran, I think I heard him play it. He's a pretty young fella there that plays pipes there, you know.
Maybe you could talk for a minute about those terms you're using for, like, the nya and the...
Oh, okay. Well, the nya is, you know, is used by traditional musicians when they like to hear that, you know, get that kind of sort of a maybe, if you like to call it in American, a sort of gutsy feeling into it, like the stomach feeling, the soul feeling of Irish music. That's what the pipes bring into it, I think, and people and fiddle players who get the nya into it, or anybody who can use his instrument, I don't care what instrument, you, if you get that nya into it, that's what's important. That's like the soul, it is actually Irish soul music, you know, and a lot of the young people just come on that lately to find out that that's really where it's at for them, you know, there's really, they can get into this themselves, as opposed to someone like the more modern kind of music, you know, and I'm not knocking the modern kind of music, I'm just saying that, you know, the Americans and the English are so good at their, you know, rock and stuff like that, they're so good at this, and they have gone so far in it that it's, you know, to compete with that kind of stuff is ridiculous. Yeah. So we have our own soul music, which is this Celtic traditional music, like, and some of the tunes go back to old Celtic times, and they, you can tell these tunes that have this really soul feeling of the Celtic people, whether they're from the north of France, the Breton country, or from Wales, or from Scotland, or from the Aran Islands, or County Clare, or Donegal, no matter where they're from in Ireland, it has this nya, this particular nya, and they get that nya in it from the Shannos, the singing, the old singing, which the people sing over there, what they call the Shannos kind of singing. Which is also another.
What's that here? Is that French?
No, Shannos. Shannos. It's a peculiar style of singing, peculiar to the old Irish in Ireland. And it's got a certain sound about it. It's got a peculiarities which relates to the Gaelic language, to the language itself. You know, to the vloss of talk about the nya and the music. There's also the one of my old school teachers, the vloss of the Gaelic language, the softness of it, you know, how they speak it.
Hmm.
And you used to have to go to the west of Ireland to get this.
So the sound of the music is really related to the sound of the language.
Well, yes, and particularly the singing of the language. A lot of the tunes, when there was no pipes and the Irish were, when all their instruments were taken away from, you know, and they just weren't allowed to play music at all. Because when you get to play music, you gather people around you, you draw people. And a crowd, the crowds are eliminated. You can't have more than two or three people together. So, and actually, there were no instruments. If they had, they were secreted away, hidden in the cabins and in the old cottages, or hidden somewhere in the trunks and underneath the floors and in the fireplaces, hidden away in stone recesses in these places, to be dragged out at a later age when we can get around to playing our music again. So this is the reason for that, you see. The people then sang, and the Shannos singing in the language preserved a lot of the music, and then when the musicians were able to get their instruments back out again, they listened to the old singers and derived from the singers the old tunes. Right. This is one of the reasons why we're talking about the nya, and the nya comes from the singing, the Shannos singing. And they say to the musician, put the old nya into it there, you see, and that's what's important about this music.
To this, you know, like the term jazz. Swing.
Yeah,
you
gotta have that swing to it, like, you know, and with, you know, and with black people in America, how, you know, how they have that feeling for it, that great feeling they have for their music. The black people seem to, you know, they love their jazz, and it's there, you know, they live it, you know, it comes from inside, and it's a gut feeling. Well, the same thing with this music of the traditional Celtic Irish music, this gut feeling you have for it, and this is where the nya comes in, and that is derived from the Shannos singing. And of course, like I say, this is important, and that's what saved it.
Mm-hmm. I'd say. Are there recordings of people doing it?
Oh yes, there is. Oh sure, there's lots of Shannos. Not lots of them. There's like quite a number of good.
So,
both men and women Shannos singers back in Ireland.
Do they sing all unaccompanied, or do they? Or
it's usually a cappella.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sung unaccompanied.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way to do Shannos singing, right? You know, and it's.
Right. Individuals or groups?
Individuals, usually individuals. There are some people who might do it in groups, but it's usually by individuals.
Okay.
Because you see, the Shannos is peculiar to that person.
Right.
Like, you know, if they were from the west of Ireland, you know, then their approach might be a little different than somebody, say, from the north at the Gaelic, the north around Donegal. Their approach to the Shannos singing might be a little different, you know. But it's all Shannos, and this is what I would say saved the traditional Irish music, you know. Because there weren't too many, if there were instruments around, they were hidden away, you know, so.
Well, what period of time?
Well, when the penal laws, that era of the penal laws in Ireland, when, see, that's why the bagpipes, the Highland, the Peeb Moor, the big pipes were forbidden in Ireland. You couldn't play the big pipes because this is forbidden by the penal laws. That was a symbol of their culture, you know, the big pipes, and these were forbidden. And we were even forbidden to speak the language, and, you know. So, and those were the times, more or less, that these things happened. And who knows, like, you know. What, you know, the attitude was, and what pressures and what the peculiarities of the situation were. You know, hundreds of years later, it's hard to figure out. But those are the facts. They did. It did happen. Anyway. So I say in the 17th century, it was the big period of this. And this is when Ireland was always referred to as a woman. The names of some of the tunes are always women. Like, you know, and Ireland was always referred to as a woman. The poor Shanban book, the old poor woman, and Caoimh na gCéir, and all these Nisulaine and all these names were put on Ireland because, you know, they couldn't talk about it, so they would give Ireland the name of a woman, and then this, they were able to get by with this, you see.
I see, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Okay, I'll play an air then. Caoimh na gCéir, which is another name for Ireland, you know. Really, I suppose symbolic of the love that the Irishman has for his homeland. You know. So.
Yeah, I noticed you were doing some things with the fingers there, easing off of the holes.
Right, I was kind of slurring the notes. I don't have a key on the bottom of this chance to get that. I needed to get an F note there that I just didn't. Couldn't get on it, but so I'm slurring the notes, sort of squeezing them out more or less.
Right.
They would call it slurring the notes, you know.
Uh huh. Because, and also the
tremolo, obviously,
tremolo.
You know, yeah, right. And in airs, like, you know, you don't use, like, you know, you won't use triplets or grips or, you know, or grace notes or stuff like that. Too much, anyway. I've used a couple of them, maybe you shouldn't do it, but I mean, I suppose.
Detracts?
Well, I wouldn't say detracts. Oh, no, it's great to be able to do it, I think. You know, I'm probably not able to do all of that. You know, some fellas, like, I have to work here, and I have to work for a living, And the only time I get to play pipes is when I come home from work, if I, you know, feel in the mood to play and can tune them up and get them in halfway decent shape. Most of the other pipers that I just mentioned, they're all, you might say, professional pipers. They're playing all the time. Not alone that they're in Ireland, where they're, you know, the relativity of Irish music is more, you know, it's right there for them. They can go right there and get it. And they can travel all over these festivals and then go there. I mean, just to come here, it's a, what, 600-700 mile trip from Detroit. 600-700 miles, twice the length of Ireland, to get here to play a few tunes, you know. And there's, and you know, and would love to meet another piper. There's none around here that I know. There might be one, but he's
do you,
not.
Do you play with people in Detroit? Do you play?
I do. I play with a group called Pat's People, who, by the way, did play in Los Angeles. And
really?
They have, not as a program, they have a new record out, and I'm on the record with them. I've never been on record before with them, but we Pat's People now. Mm-hmm. And they're originally from Belfast. Ray McGuire, Wallace Hood, and Frank Kennedy. And they played at a place out there, Shaughnessy's, is it?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
they were out there a couple of years ago and did several, couple of trips out there. And they're really very good. They've gone from what they used to do more into the traditional line now of playing. Mm-hmm. And Wallace Hood, Ray has since acquired a flute and is doing very well on a wood Irish flute. And Wallace has got himself a citron or a bouzouki, made by a fella here in Chicago, Dave Weidman, I think his name is. He does an excellent job.
Now, is that just a direct borrowing from the Greek instrument, or is it?
Yes, it is, because the bouzouki is adaptable to Irish music, especially when what happens is, you know, the original Greek bouzouki has a rounded back like a mandolin. Well, the Irish way of doing it is they flatten, it's just straight back, flatten like a guitar, flatten the back to bring the instrument closer into the body, and it makes it much better for getting the quick triplets and notes that they have to use them in the Irish music, jigs, reels, and harp.
So that's kind of the same way that the banjo has been.
Yes, only the banjo now. The banjo is a good instrument, but the banjo to me is, and to most Irish like pipers are people, is a sort of loud. It comes on very strong. So banjo playing like sort of obliterates or goes over the top of like the fiddle or the pipes or the flute. There's more resonance and there's more of a bang off of it, you know. So it's a good instrument, but it's a bit loud, you know, comes across over. So the bouzouki is a little softer in tone. Like, it's like the mandolin is also a nice instrument to play. And I'd say mandolin and bouzouki are great. They would also fit into that. And citron, the same thing, would fit into this group here. Like the softer instruments sort of blend together, you know. Like the same thing now with a nice button accordion, if it's played, you know, well. And like there's one kid here I met, he was out there in Los Angeles. There was an Irish play out there here. I think it started there last month. Billy McComiskey from Brooklyn, New York, American. And he's excellent, absolutely excellent on the button accordion. Excellent player. I thought he was as good as any I've seen around. And he's American, you know, an excellent player. This Billy McComiskey. I thought he was really good, you know.
Wow.
He could really mash out those tones, yeah. So this the button accordion, but it's like I say, this bouzouki has adapted the Irish music by flattening the back. I think the first one that I ever heard playing was a fellow by the name of Donald Lunny, who's in Ireland. He's an excellent, absolutely good bouzouki player. He's all around good guitar singer, but he is the first one that I heard use the bouzouki to good effect in Irish traditional music. There may be more people, you know. Another instrument that I think fits in very well with the thing is the concertina. And there's a fellow there in the west of Ireland, Noel Hill, who's excellent on that, you know. And, fiddle player, I think, is Tony Lennon. They have a record out which is very good, too, for a blend of instruments like that, you know.
Yeah, another term you're using was the crayon.
Oh, crayon, that's the bottom note on the bottom of the chanter. You'll get that when you get this. That bottom hard D, you get a crayon. That's what they call it, a crayon. And that's one of the peculiarities of the pipes, the inner pipes. Now, you couldn't get that sound on the big pipes because the man with the big pipes has got his chanter out in the air like that, you see.
Right.
And he would not be able to to put his stop his chanter unless he raises his knee up, like, you know, to get that. Whereas the inner piper has that option of raising, stopping the chanter and pulling it off his off his knee like this, you see. Which gives us, of course, then you can't march with the Ealing pipes either. You have to sit down to play them. This is another disadvantage. You know, people call, you say, oh, we need a piper to play at a wedding. well, I don't do the sit down. Well, how are you going to march out with a couple, you see?
Right,
you can't
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or it's, you know, it'd be pretty hard. You're supposed to be dragging on the ground.
Yeah.
So the kneeling pipes in that way are more or less you know, for sitting down.
So the
music also.
You can't
right.
play military music.
Right. Well, they do play marches on. They play
yeah,
marches
yeah.
and that. Oh, yeah, they play marches, yeah. They play marches on the pipes. And, oh, sure they do. And, of course, like I say, the instrument itself has a wide range of capabilities. You can do an awful lot with it, you know.
You're saying this is more versatile in terms of melody than the other pipes?
Well, no, that's all according to what you mean by melody. I mean, I don't mean that, you know, the Highland bagpipes, the Pete Moore, are the purest form of pipes. And you know, my father plays them, so I'd better be careful what I say
that's
here.
Right.
You know, so I'm like I'm saying, no, and they were played in Ireland. There was as many big pipe players in Ireland today even than there are in Scotland.
Hmm.
The big pipes are still big in Ireland, and they've come back. They've made a great comeback. I'm just saying that the Illion pipes has two octaves, and there are certain tunes which are adapted more into the Illion pipes because of the fact that you can go into the higher octave.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the P more, you're restricted, not restricted, but they have the music is written for the big pipes. Whereas with the Illion pipes, you could probably say even maybe some modern kind of music on it, like you know,
right.
You could play some modern songs, like you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you wouldn't do that with a big Highland pipes because it just wouldn't fit. Like, you know. Now there are some people. There's a man in Ontario, Canada, his name is Gordon Tuck, and he's the pipe major of the Grand McNish Pipe Band in St. Catharines, and another friend of mine, John Scott. And John Scott is an excellent Highland piper, and so is Gordon Tuck, and they're good friends. And this Gordon Tuck has made a couple of albums, and he's brought in, like, you know, like other modern instruments
oh, yeah.
and made and blended these tunes, modern tunes that would only be played, say, by a Scottish ceilidh band and blended them with the Highland pipes, and he does an excellent job.
Mm.
So it can be done if you have somebody with, say, with this man Tuck's ability to know what to do with pipes, then you know you can get a nice blend here. The pipes can be, you know, adapted.
Like blending with more
blended, right, right. And there's a man in France, the north of France, his name is Alan Stavell. And Alan Stavell is an excellent Highland piper. He also plays the Celtic harp, and he has been able to bring in like the biniou, the French biniou, and the musette to play with the big Highland pipes also. And he plays the drum, the bowron, which is an Irish thing, the goatskin drum, the one sort of, that is also another instrument used in this kind of music. And this Stavell has done this, and so there are some people around who have broken out with this kind of music. Now, of course, this has been going on since the late 60s, and it's all through the 70s. I don't know. I'm not back there in Europe, so I couldn't say if it is really tearing along or, you know, really going great guns or what. I would hope it is.
Yeah.
They say, like, in Holland and Germany, they really love this kind of music, so, and that's great news
to
me.
I think they have certain appreciation for American folk music, too.
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, see, of course, like I say, but the American folk music is a derivative of the Scots and Irish music. The Irish jigs and reels, many, many movies, like I've seen, you know, John Wayne have, you know, Irish tunes in them, you know.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, well, all the tunes that we've been recording from these fiddle players.
Sure. You know, like Miss McLeod's Reel is, you know, and all this kind of stuff, the Turkey in the Straw.
Mm-hmm.
These are all derivatives of Irish music because many of the people who came here went down south and went into the hills and you know, played their fiddles
sure.
and their...
Sure.
concertinas and stuff like that and brought them with them, and their mountain dulcimers, which is another instrument which was formerly called a tin pan, which fits in with the music also, the tin pan, mountain dulcimer or the hammer dulcimer, this fits into this kind of music also. It's those kind of instruments that come in. I would say the only thing that wouldn't do, that I think doesn't, if you have an electrified instrument, like, you know, once you plug in, you seemingly get away from the tradition to sort of get,
sure.
you have to make certain allowances here. If somebody knows how to play music and really wants to play Irish music and saxophone, great. You know, it's not traditional though, but it's let's face it, that's what a man wants to do, great, you know. So
maybe we get out of tune.
Okay.
You have to
I have to be back at the festival. At 3 o'clock.
Thank you.
the hornpipe. I think it's, I'm not sure. I think it's the Kingston, I'm not sure. That's, I think that's the name.
Kingston hornpipe?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it is. It's nice. It's, I like it. It's an old hornpipe. It's nothing new about it. It's one of the, probably one of the first hornpipes I heard is a young fella playing pipes back in, I think I heard them. The first gave me the inspiration to go into the pipes was a man by the name of Martin Burke. And he lived off Dorset Street in Dublin. And my father used to, when I was 5 or 6 years old, he would take me up there on a Saturday night and we'd go up there to talk to Martin Burke. He was a reed maker and pipe maker, and we'd go up there and he lived in a little house, little block house, you know, house up there. And he had tapes of an old Irish piper who was American, really, a man by the name of Patsy Toohey. Patsy Toohey was a great American piper. And he played around the Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, this kind of thing. And he had these cylinders, you know, these wax cylinders that were made, and he had them wrapped in cotton wool, and he'd take them out and put them on the old cylinder round, you know. So you listen to this man here, and of course, Patsy Toohey was a great piper. From what I could hear anyway of what I, you know, he was just marvelous, you know, and a great guy, you know. And that was, Martin Burke anyway, was the first man to play these, you know, things when he'd have me sitting in there while they'd be talking, and I'd be sitting listening to the cylinders, you know, and it would run off, and he'd have to come back in and put it back on again, you know. But that's where I got, more or less, I felt that I got my inspiration with the pipe, and then I went over to play pipes, or to learn, or try to learn piping from Mr. Rowson, Leo Rowson, and Leo put up with me for a long time, and I'm still trying to learn how to play the pipes, to be honest with you, you know. It takes years. You're always learning something, you know, and you're always trying to learn, you know, trying to improve yourself. But as I say, like, I put in a lot of time. I was 4 years in the service here, you know, and in that whole 4 years, I never did get a chance to get a set of pipes in my hand. And I just played them once in a great while. I never really got back into them again until I saw Liam Flynn played them back up. He probably didn't realize it at the time, but it's a strange thing. I just found out about Liam Flynn being in Ann Arbor. He had played the Philadelphia Folk Festival, and he played it with this American guy, Pat Skye. And Pat Skye brought him to Ann Arbor. They were doing a bunch of gigs, you see. And somebody called me and says, Al, this good Irish piper's up here, this Liam O'Flynn. Now, Liam O'Flynn is probably, you know, one of the top 8 or 9 pipers in the country. There are a lot of good young Irish pipers in the country, but I'd say Liam O'Flynn and Keenan and Fury are the tops. Like, you know, these guys are the good, really good pipers. And so you're like talking about the Van Cleburnes of the Irish Illing pipes, you know. And these fellows are really, they're at it all the time. So Liam was a great, he didn't know it, of course. I just talked to him for a few minutes in a restaurant called the Brown Jug in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
And then we went back to a friend of mine, his place, his apartment, and we talked. And then that night, Pat Skye and Liam O'Flynn did this concert at the Yark in Ann Arbor. And this place is run by a fellow named Dave Ziegland. Mm-hmm. And Dave Ziegland is very, tries as much as he can to bring in folk music, both American and Irish and English and Scottish folk music. He's big on it, you know. And he does a great job bringing it. But anyway, this is where I saw Liam, and I kind of said to myself, well, I think it's about time you start getting back into the pipes again. There's not that many people. And there wasn't anybody for years, or I hadn't heard of anybody. And nobody. I heard from nobody. I didn't know anybody was playing. Nobody ever got in touch with me. I played in Chicago one time in 1955 for the Chicago Fesh, and I was never approached by anybody there about playing pipes or who played pipes. So I was on my own, and most of the piping that I've done since then has been just picked up from myself and from my father, who played Eland pipes also. He used to play a flat set of pipes, and which is a longer chanter, which is the original Irish pipes, was the long chanter, and they are about B flat, B sharp, B flat, and this, you know, they're a softer sound. And my father played those pipes, so most of the piping I learned or have picked up has been on my own, you know.
Records,
well, usually when I've gone back to Ireland several times and I listen to the lads over there playing, like, you know, I've listened to, like, you know, the pipers there, Gallagher and Dan Dowd and several of the other pipers, and, you know, Sean Seary and Gabriel McKeown, who's a young Irish piper. I've had him stay at my home. It's Gabriel McKeown, and I had Sean Seary stay at home, and another man by the name of Peter Carberry, and who's a very a nice man, and he's a good piper too. So I've listened to these people and their records, and, you know, assume and got the tunes from them, you know. So